You are tuned to Spoke. It is 20 minutes to 10. And Luke Taylor from the Transition Decade Alliance and Sustainable Living Foundation has joined me in the studio for his fortnightly segment. Good morning, Luke.
Good morning, Michelle.
And we are joined by a whole heap of people this morning to talk politics and climate change. Margarita Windisch from the Socialist Alliance, who's running for Wills. Adrian Whitehead is a candidate from a new party, Save the Planet Party. And Janet Rice, who's running for the Greens Senate for Victoria. Good morning to you all.
Morning.
Morning.
Now, Michelle, in recent times, I guess we've seen a little bit or somewhat of a rise in some of the minor parties. And, of course, we're in a lead-up to election at the moment, which I'm sure thrills a lot of listeners out there. But it is a great time for us to obviously have a closer look at the parties and what they're standing for. And because obviously this show is about sustainability and the environment, we thought what we would do is invite a number of representatives and from their parties to come in to talk to us about how their policy relates specifically to climate change and the climate emergency that we face. So just to start off, I was just wondering if each of you could just give us a little bit of an intro, set the context for us about yourself and your party and what you're standing for. Janet, would you like to say?
Why not? Yes. So, look, I'm the Greens' lead Senate candidate for the election in September. Coming off a background of active involvement in the Greens since the beginning of the Greens in Victoria 20 years ago, I was a Maribyrnong councillor for 6 years, mayor for a year, led Maribyrnong to be one of the first local governments to commit to going carbon neutral, which is certainly a big achievement than I thought then. But I originally did a science degree, learned about climate change, transformational moment, and headed off as a career as an environmental activist, and then, you know, got sold out by the Labor Party and was one of the founders of the Greens. Been there ever since.
Quite a story. And now, obviously, Adrian, you're entering into the political space for the first time?
No, not my first time. So, I actually started. I always liked politics. I liked the engagement with people, and politics is, you know, people hate it and so on and so forth. But it's one of the things that changes people's lives. So you need to be involved if you want to make a better world. And I actually joined the Young Liberals when I was 16. So just put that out there on the table. I'm getting some looks. I then ran for the Greens many times. My background is as an environmental activist, mainly a forest activist, and I changed over to climate change in about 2003. And, during my time as a forest activist, I ran, I think it was about five times for the Greens at different levels, local government, state and federal. And now we set up taking that sort of forward, a political party called Save the Planet. And the sort of vibe of Save the Planet is that we don't actually want to exist, like we'd like not to be here, but we feel that we're going to play an important role in promoting the issue of the climate emergency that we're currently all in and encouraging all parties, not just the ones next to us, and these are the strongest parties on climate change around, but more importantly, the major parties, Liberals and Labor and those sort of people, to move and adopt the sort of policies that we need if we're going to avoid a climate catastrophe.
Margarita.
Yeah, good morning. I work at ATAFE. I work at Victoria University, and I've been teaching for quite a few years. I'm actually a social worker by profession. And I've been quite involved in local but also state and federal politics. I'm actually a founding member of the Socialist Alliance that sort of came together from, you know, a range of different socialist groups and individuals in 2001. And the idea really of the Socialist Alliance is start to put forward an alternative to really the free market politics that we see that are mainly promulgated by the big parties. And Socialist Alliance is a very explicit anti-capitalist party and puts forward policies that actually would in a way transform our economy and really put it in the hands of the public with democratic control. I moved to Australia in the late 80s from Austria, and Austria has always been sort of seen as one of the beautiful capitalist countries with a nice smile. Austria and Sweden were always sort of showcased as the pinnacles of social democracy. And my experience actually showed that that is really a fallacy. And that's why, for me, for instance, Labour Party politics or, you know, sort of social democratic politics were never really a kind of option. And so I got involved quite early on when I moved to Australia in sort of socialist politics and have never, ever regretted it.
Thanks, Margarita. So I've asked each of you to come into the studio today, again, for the purposes of getting to know more about where your parties lie and stand for on climate change specifically. But specifically, I guess the question is, with the climate emergency, does your party recognise, are we in a climate emergency? Is that the position of each of your parties? Janet, would you like to start off in terms of representing the Greens?
Yes, and I think probably the most straightforward thing to say is just what a strong track record the Greens have got on recognising the climate emergency. When Christine Milne started talking about the climate emergency in 2009, she was one of the speakers at the T10 launch in 2010 and talked about the climate emergency and the need for urgent sustained action then. Adam Bandt, in his maiden speech last year, talked strongly about the climate emergency and the need for serious action. So we've got that, you know, as a fundamental. Now our policy, you know, really says that, you know, we are in a climate emergency and we need to be taking serious action. And, you know, and certainly in terms of then action on climate change, you see it as being, you know, one of the absolute fundamental key drivers of Greens policy overall. It was, you know, the number one negotiation issue when after the 2010 election, deciding to form government and support the Labor Party in forming government. And of course, we got the price on carbon and $10 billion investment into clean energy sort of as a result of those negotiations.
There have been some compromises that that the Greens haven't been happy with, hence the sort of very public falling out most recently with that. Do you think that that has watered down your position, or do you fear that that could have?
No, it hasn't watered down the position. It's just that when you're there in government and you're, you know, there's what you can achieve as a party in government, which is certainly a lot, and sort of having the balance of power in the Senate and the balance of power in the House of Representatives, having Adam Bandt elected in Melbourne. There's a lot that you can achieve, but, you know, we are a party that's got, you know, 9 senators and 1 House of Representatives member. You're always in a position in terms of achieving things of having to negotiate things with the major parties. So for the Greens, you know, it's not so much a watering down or a compromise, it's a recognition, OK, we've only got this far, so far. You know, I think Christine described the price on carbon as sort of the opening paragraph, and it's the first step forward.
And what's your current emissions target at the moment, reduction in carbon emissions at the moment?
We're saying that we require a return to atmospheric concentrations of CO2 to 350 parts per million or lower, and our policy states that we are wanting net zero or net negative Australian greenhouse gas emissions within a generation, and setting up binding national emission targets for each year through to 2050, supported by a detailed strategy. So, basically, it's as soon as possible. It's saying the science is clear. The science says that we need to be moving to zero or net negative emissions as soon as possible. And clearly how fast that can happen depends on the political will and the political support for doing that.
Adrian?
Hi. Yeah, well, I mean, the key with Save the Planet Party, we're focused around the climate emergency. That's why we've come to exist. And so, you know, our core policies are looking at policies designed to reduce global average temperatures back to the sort of the pre-industrial era. And that means reducing greenhouse gases back down to that level as fast as possible. So we have a whole suite of policies I'm happy to go into detail a bit later to do. But, you know, it includes looking at such things as going to zero emission energy system based on renewables, going to electrified and, you know, people-powered transport systems with fast rail, bikes, walking, that sort of thing. It also looks at having a net negative agricultural system where there's a lot of emissions associated with agriculture, cows, sheep, and, you know, fertilisers, for instance, are the emission sources, and we could do, you know, massive revegetation where we've done a lot of clearing in the past. We can use something called biochar, which is a form of charcoal, and it's very stable once it's put in the ground. It also helps agriculture, if it's done correctly, to actually draw down atmospheric greenhouse gas levels, and that's one of the really critical things we need to do. It's not just about going to net zero. If we go to net zero as one of the two options Janet sort of mentioned is for the Greens, we're not actually going to save anything. We're going to have to draw down atmospheric greenhouse gases at a rapid rate because we've already got too much out there. And, you know, it simply we're on a track to something like 4 to 5 degree temperature warming, and that's a catastrophe for both human social systems and environmental systems across the globe.
So, sorry, Adrian, are you you're talking about a particular time frame in terms of your emission reduction?
We'd be looking at putting in the zero emission type systems within 10 years. So that's at emergency speed. So that's something you can't do with a tax. It's something you can't do with a trading scheme. It's something that needs to be government-led and community-supported, and it's restructuring of industries and systems across the board. And we try and do that within 10 years. And beyond that, it's as fast as possible with the drawdown. And the sooner we can get it done, the better chance we have of critical climate stabilising systems falling apart. So, you know, they include the North Pole, acts as a big reflective barrier putting the sun out, includes the permafrost around the Arctic and so on and so forth. You know, major forest systems like Amazon are in danger of collapsing and burning and so on and so forth.
Adrian, your background with Beyond Zero Emissions,
yeah,
a lot of their systems that they've been working on answer what you're talking about. Are you using some of those ideas from
absolutely.
BZE?
Yeah, absolutely. So Beyond Zero Emissions is, you know, it's out there educating around the solutions that we need for an emergency speed transition, and it's release a stationary energy plan. And, you know, we link to that. That's that, you know, we say, look, you know, we look at this is the sort of policy that we'd implement. And, you know, they've got the transport plan coming out, the buildings plan will come out. And so we're referring to the type of work Beyond Zero Emissions. But there's other people doing similar things. You know, one of the government bodies has also said that you can do a zero-emission energy system. And one of the other scientists, his name skips me, I'll bring in later, you know, someone else has already, you know, done that sort of work. And so we point to that. One thing that we are pushing for is that what we'd like to see governments do at the moment is start the planning process for the emergency. So, you know, we need to set up a very rapid system of research and then implementation and get the plans developed so we can actually move down that path.
Margarita.
Well, I think the severity and the speed of climate change has been severely, severely underestimated. And if we even talk about a target of 2% warming, we know that actually will bring disaster. And I think our climate science actually shows now that the situation has become so urgent with the melting of the Arctic ice and everything, that it's only really radical social and economic transformation that can give us a hope of being able to live in a planet that's worthwhile living in. And in that context, the Socialist Alliance is actually putting forward safe climate targets of 300 to 325 parts per million. And we're talking about 100% renewables by 2020. So that gives us really 7 years. And that requires very, very big transformation of society. And in one way, I think the Socialist Alliance is prepared to actually talk about the big elephant in the room, which is really the market. And do market measures actually live up to the challenge that climate change poses? And we don't think it does. And I think what the big challenge for us is that I think in society, and especially I'm talking more about also our mainstream parties, they are, I think they're prepared to even or can imagine the wholesale destruction of our earth and the climate than actually being able to see a breakdown of capitalism. So I guess so what we are saying is that you can't put the wolf in charge of looking after the sheep. I mean, if we think that climate change can really be addressed through market measures such as, you know, the emissions trading schemes or just a carbon tax, then we are actually suggesting that the system that is partly responsible for human-induced climate change, that has also brought us the global financial and economic crisis, will actually solve the problem. And I think actually that is highly idealistic. socialists are always accused of being very idealistic and utopian, but I think it's extremely idealistic to suggest that with the current system in place we can resolve the crisis. So what we are actually putting forward is that we actually need to look at some much bigger transformative change, which for instance includes also the nationalisation of the mining, the energy and the banking sector, so that at least society or the public can start to determine what kind of mining needs to be done, for what purpose, and also use then, be able to retool some of the industries and some of the sectors so we can start massive, massive production of renewable energy, you know, resources that we need.
Let's talk about that massive transformation then, because there seems to be a fair bit of agreement that obviously recognition of the climate emergency, and perhaps some differences, but also a lot of similarities in terms of the targets that that each of the parties stand for, and maybe the timing in which we need to get there as well. But can we talk specifically getting into some of the policies themselves? Janet, where would you say the Greens are at the moment in terms of this transition that we're talking about, of getting to this safe climate economy, or so to speak? What's the central policy, concept behind getting to a safe climate economy?
The key thing is knowing that we've got to have that transition to occur, and that we have got the ability. You know, if you look at all of the examples and all the technologies and the models that are there, that it's possible. And how you then shift your economy, it's really getting that commitment to say we do need to shift to a zero carbon or negative carbon economy. It's got to happen globally as well, but Australia can play a leadership role in that. And that will be achieved by a mix of market-based measures and regulatory measures. And basically, the Greens' position is that, you know, a highly regulated market economy is what we think should be, if you've got that political commitment to be able to do it, should be able to drive that transition. But there's no doubt that, you know, we recognise that it's a massive change. But of course, you know, the business as usual model at the moment is also going to result in massive change, because it's just totally unsustainable. And so all of the economic problems that the world's facing at the moment, you know, are not going to go away, and they're based on total unsustainability of what we're doing.
And as part of your, I guess, pitch is that, you know, that you're already an established party at the moment, and that you are in somewhat at times, especially I guess through the last parliament, in some position of influence to be able to push, obviously,
absolutely,
those major parties.
The Greens are there in the parliament as a strong alternative voice for sustainability and for a zero carbon economy. And that, you know, we've already got a senator in every state. We elected, you know, over a million people voted Green at the last election. We've got nine senators. We've got Adam in the House of Representatives, and we're looking to increase our numbers come the election. So we're there as a party with influence. We're certainly planning on, you know, we want to be in coalition government to begin with, and would be lovely to be in government ourselves at some stage. But the aim is, you know, to be increasing our numbers in the House of Representatives so that we will have further power to be able to get that change that's required.
We are looking
in Australia and globally.
We are looking at, if the coalition does get in September, we are possibly looking at them having greater control in the Senate also. And that should be, I think, what people think about too when they're voting come September.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking certainly, you know, all the opinion polls are pointing to Tony Abbott being our Prime Minister after September. So the importance of having the Greens maintaining balance of the power in the Senate to be able to stop the excesses, which will be awful. I mean, Abbott's going to be, you know, his number one platform of sort of abandoning the carbon tax and cutting jobs, cutting health funding, cutting education funding. You know, they're the sort of things that having the Greens in the Senate to be able to say, no, you know, we're not going to support that, is going to be really important.
Not to mention his direct action policy on climate
which
change.
Which is going to cost billions of dollars and not achieve anything. And with, you know, a 5% cut, which, as we all know in this room, is just laughable in terms of what's going to be required.
Do you think, I mean, as we all know in this room, do you think the general electorate knows this, you know, what we're talking about, this idea of a climate emergency?
No, I don't think they do, which is what I think sort of the biggest need in the community. And for me, as a, I mean, I'm coming from a background as a community activist and a community campaigner, I intend to continue on, if elected in the Senate, to continue being an activist and a community campaigner. But we need to be having the real upswell in the community campaign to be able to raise awareness of the importance of this issue, because certainly, you know, it's all very well for me to be saying, you know, the Greens are going to increase in power and in numbers, but that means we need to have people voting for us, and we need to have people voting on the issue of climate. And at the moment, most people aren't voting on the issue of climate. It's not up there in what they're thinking about when they're thinking about who they're voting for.
Adrian, you're in a bit of a different situation as a party, or in fact, you're still working towards becoming a party.
Yeah,
is
we
that
are. Correct? Yeah, we're trying to get our 500 members, who are all people who can vote in Australia and are signed up as a member. They can do it online on our website at voteplanet.net. And we're trying to get that as soon as possible. We've probably only got a week before that timeline cuts off for us for the federal election. And after that, we'll still run. Like, we're not stopping, but we won't get our name on the ballot. So we'll be there as an independent, effectively. And, you know, we'll have a couple of us running for Senate, and then probably about another four or five people running in lower house seats. If we can raise the money, and I just want to put in that the cost for running for election were recently doubled by the Labor government, so it's gone from $500 to $1,000 for a lower house seat and $1,000 to $2,000 for a single senator to run. And for small parties like us and Socialist Alliance, that's a huge issue. That's a lot of money for people just on normal or very low incomes to raise.
So you're in a very different situation, obviously, to the Greens in terms of you're not only a small party,
yeah,
but you're the first time in. The type of change that you're talking about, as we've, you know, just discussed, is huge in scale and short in time frame. Why should people be voting for a very small party that's got a massive agenda? How can you actually affect change?
Well, we do that two ways. We put the climate issue front and centre. So unlike the two parties next to me, we don't have any other issues that we're running with. And so that's our message. It's in a climate emergency. It's a really serious problem, and these are the solutions we have to solve the problem. By voting for us, people, and a lot of people don't understand that. We get lots of comments on the Facebook sites and so on, people saying, well, I don't want to split the votes, divide and conquer and things. We have a preference system here in Australia. So it means that if you vote one for us and then put the Greens candidate number two, then your vote goes to the Greens candidate. If you vote one for us in the Senate, our votes will go to the parties with the strongest climate policies. And it means that the two parties, either side of me, Social Alliance and the Greens, have much stronger climate policies than either of the major parties. So your vote gets to go to them. It's not lost, it stays. So the other thing we're doing, which is different from other parties, is we're holding city members to account. So we're not particularly caring whether Labor or Liberal or Green or whatever, but so long, if they're not running a climate emergency policy, we're going to put the city member last. Okay, and so what that does, it says this is the most serious issue that we're facing. It may not feel it right here and now, but what we do in the next 10 or 15 years will determine whether we survive as a, you know, as a complex society into the future. And if we don't take this really seriously, if the sitting candidates are not taking responsibility for this, then we're going to put them last and say, hey,
show them up.
Yeah, totally. And we also want to promote. We also have a system promoting strong candidates within the given party, and also looking at the bottom dwellers, those candidates that are really performing poorly on climate.
Margarita, what about the Socialist Alliance? Obviously, been around, established for quite mm-hmm. some time. Why should people be voting for you in terms of the position? And again, going back to the fact that the agenda that we're setting here for ourselves is a massive transformation agenda, how can that be done with a minor party like the Socialist Alliance?
It can be done because it needs to be done. I guess that's our message. Our message is that this is the biggest crisis humanity has ever faced, and it will not be able to be resolved with small measures as proposed by the current government. So we've got a very strong critique of the Clean Energy Futures package, because it's pretty obvious that the carbon tax, which now will transform itself into an ETS, is completely ineffective in actually tackling climate change. We are now in the critical decade, and what's being put forward is actually an illusion that some of these as the key measures will actually solve our problem. The global carbon trading is in crisis, and so is the European ETS, and now the European public is even asked to bail out the trading scheme. So what we are actually saying is, in order to really be able to bring down emissions and actually decarbonize the atmosphere, we cannot rely on these basic market measures that are not working. The other interesting thing is actually what we are putting forward in Socialist Alliance is actually not necessarily so radical, like massive investment, public investment in renewable energy, retooling of factories, all of that has been done in the past. But it seems to be that now it's just about socialists who are actually putting forward big challenges to kind of market measures. I think the biggest challenge for us on the progressive left is actually being able to move away from this idea, from this kind of religion that the market will solve our problem. And it is a religion in this country. And it's actually hugely problematic. The biggest challenges we've actually seen to potentially solve the climate crisis and through that also social justice, because what we're saying is it's not just the climate that's at stake, it's actually the ability of the majority of the planet's population to actually live a decent life. We have seen in South America, and we've seen it especially with Bolivia and also with Venezuela, two governments who've actually started to challenge some of this notion that you can resolve everything through the market, and it's actually the market that has to be challenged, and they are putting forward real alternatives. They've also led, for instance, in some of the big summits like Copenhagen, and actually said, you know, we need these kinds of targets to make life viable for ordinary people.
Margaret, we might just get Janet's response to that.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in because it's not a matter of, and say, the Greens' position that the market's going to solve everything. And I think, you know, it's a combination, and which our policy says there are market measures and there are going to be regulatory and legislative measures as well. And certainly, the emissions trading scheme, the price on pollution, the Greens recognise is not the whole solution, unlike the Labor Party, who are basically saying, OK, you know, we've got a carbon tax now, that's all we need. That's, as I said, you know, it's the first step forward and we're going to need a whole range of measures. And certainly in order to get the rapid transformational change that we need, we're going to have market measures and regulatory measures. My problem with the position of the Socialist Alliance is I can't see us getting the political transformation in order to implement saying we don't need market measures, we're just going to, you know, we're going to have a, and we're going to get rid of the market economy and its role in doing that. I just think that's pie in the sky in order to be able to get the change needed on the timescales required. I think there's the potential, you know, the key thing we've got to do in terms of the market is to be wedging the business community. And so getting the business community who are committed to having an economy that serves people and serves the environment and is serving, you know, the climate emergency to actually be playing their role.
Adrian, where does the Safe Climate Save the Party...
Save the Party
sit on economic frameworks?
Look, we need to rebuild the economy. The way it's working is based on growth. Growth with material and population is infinitely is just not possible. So we need to change it. We need to change the way money's used and created, and we need to change the system of powerful vested corporate interests and their influence over politics. And we're not going to do it through market mechanisms at the speed that we need. So that's just going to have to change. It doesn't mean we have to go down to a socialist state-owned system, still have private industry, etc. We could do it either way. It doesn't really matter, but it has to be fast.
You're going to give us the wrap-up, aren't you?
I'm going to give you the wrap-up. Thank you so much, Luke Taylor, for joining us fortnightly. We will see you in a fortnight's time.
We need a lot more time on these issues, Michelle.
We do. Well, let's reconvene.
Thank you.
We have been speaking with Janet Rice from the Greens, Adrian Whitehead from Save the Planet Party, who are looking for members. You can check them out at voteplanet.net, and Janet Rice is on the Greens website. And we have also been speaking to Margarita Windisch from the Socialist Alliance in Melbourne. Thank you so much for your time this morning, and good luck come September 14th.
Thanks, Michelle. Thanks, Luke.
Thank you.